Please be seated. 6 years ago, I was serving as the startup priest for a new church in the Diocese of Virginia, and this gospel came up for Sunday, and I really didn't want to talk about it, but I had to, because it was the gospel for Sunday. And I was at the library at William & Mary College in Williamsburg, Virginia, doing some research, and I had my sermon notebook with me and a Bible and a pen. So I went out on the lawn at William & Mary in the main quadrangle and lay down in the grass under a crepe myrtle tree and started thinking about the sermon. And this phrase that's in today's gospel kept coming up in my ear. And the phrase was, "Did you not sow good seed in your field?" And thinking about the field being the world, the first thing that came to mind was Genesis chapter 1, when God created the heavens and the earth. At the end of the creation, he said, "Lo, it's good." And then he made human beings and put us in it, and still said, "Lo, it's very good." So I'm sitting there thinking, of course, and Jesus is the ultimate good seed. So the world is good, and God sows good seed in the field. And as I'm sitting there, I'm watching squirrels scamper around and mockingbirds and cardinals hop around and sing, and bees are harvesting the sweetness off the fallen blossoms on the ground. And then I decided to lie down on my side, put my cheek on the grass, and the grass had recently been mown, but it was still, you know, had some texture to it, and you could see the bees undulating around on the blades of grass, and the grass sort of moving in the breeze, and the crepe myrtles were bowing in the wind. And I just had this incredible sense of being enveloped by God. As Psalm 71 says, "You enfold me and comfort me." And Psalm 33:3, "The loving kindness of the Lord fills the whole earth." And that I was actually lying on God in the grass. You know, that God's life was in the grass and in the bees and in the cardinals and in the squirrels, and that everything was just teeming with the life of God. So yes, God sows good seed in his field. Where do the weeds come from, they ask? Violence and genocide and ugliness and ignorance and pain and moral failure. Where do all those things come from? And my answer is, I don't quite know. But this parable doesn't really answer that question so much as it tells us what God does about it. And one of the most interesting things about this parable, and I can't take credit for this idea, I got it from Phoebe Perkins in her book on the parables. She's a New Testament scholar, teaches at Boston College. But it just struck me as I read her and looked at this parable that there's this incredible gentleness in this story. An enemy has done this. It's kind of a weird way to sabotage, isn't it? Why not just cut the wheat down or burn it rather than sow weed seeds? But the owner, it's a small village, the farmer knew who did it. But there's no retaliation in this story. It just says, an enemy did it, leave it alone. Leave it alone. So the question comes to me is, how do I respond to evil in the world? How do we respond? We see what's going on around us. We feel smothered, overwhelmed, and intimidated by it. And we get angry, or we get despondent, or we get frightened, or we get depressed. We withdraw from it. We hide from it behind our burglar alarms and, you know, our car alarms. And how do we respond when someone does something to us? We get even, maybe? Or we just try to frustrate them? It's one way of getting even. Or we, like the psalmist, we pray that God will toast them. You know? Or we just withdraw from them. But how does God respond to evil in the world? We get a clue in Jesus Christ, don't we? Jesus came and was radically involved in the world and healed and preached and taught. You know? And on the cross, rather than pray for his enemies to be toasted, he prayed, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." So God's response to evil is not to withdraw are to destroy. God's response is to get radically involved and try to mend and heal. And in Jesus Christ, we see that God does not retaliate against evil. God chooses rather to absorb evil in God's love and rob it of its power to generate more evil. That's what the cross is. It's like Martin Luther King Jr. once said in a sermon. The old law of an eye for an eye leaves everybody blind. So there's this incredible gentleness in God. But there's also a kind of confidence. The farmer says, let both grow together till the harvest. Or to put it another way, the wheat will survive the weeds. The wheat, that's you and me, by the way. This is not really about church discipline. Some people have taken it that way, that you're not supposed to discipline people in the church. Well, Matthew didn't understand that. If you go to chapter 18, he has the guidelines for church discipline. This is not about dealing with sabotage in the church. It's about the mission of the church in the world. Jesus was radically involved in the world, and the weeds did not overcome him, did they? So if you're feeling smothered in your place of work or at the school where you are or in your job or in your neighborhood, and sometimes in the church by people who may be even less faithful than you are and less faithful than I am, because we're all somewhat unfaithful. What is God saying? I put you there. I planted you there. Don't forget that. You're where you are because that's where you're supposed to be. And you can thrive there. The evil will not overwhelm you. You can be radically involved in the world. You can be a witness. You can be a servant. That's where you're supposed to be. Let both grow together till the harvest. Now let's just imagine, for pretense sake, that today at 3 p.m., lightning struck every wicked, evil, unbelieving person in Woodford County and took them all out. What a pleasant thought, you might say. No. How many of those people do you love? How many of those people are friends of yours? If that happened, we would all be terribly distressed. Isn't that what the farmer said? If you pull up the weeds, you may disturb the wheat too. Let both grow together till the harvest. God believes in us. And believes that we can immerse ourselves in the world and live where we live and be where we are without being overwhelmed and smothered by the evil around us. Let both grow together till the harvest. And remember this, Jesus lives in you. The Spirit of God is in you. And this is a good world. God is everywhere in this world. I've become more and more convinced of that. The loving kindness of the Lord does fill the whole earth. God's life is in every tree in this county, in every blade of grass. The eyes of every animal that look at you, through those eyes, God looks at you. This is a good world. And Christ lives in us in this world. This is God's world. We're sent out into it on mission. And the evil is a temporary phenomenon. There is a harvest. There's the end of the age. And look what happens. The farmer says, at the harvest, we'll gather the wheat, we'll tie up the weeds in tight little bundles. Because you see, in Palestine, there was a shortage of firewood. So those weeds did not destroy the wheat, did they? There was a harvest. And at the end of the age, there'll be this glorious harvest. The weeds will not destroy the wheat. In fact, quite the opposite. The weeds that were meant to destroy the wheat are the firewood that bakes the bread. And so the ugliness and the evil and the ignorance and the moral failure and the pain that is so all about us will not frustrate God's purpose. It will serve God's purpose. The evil of the world is the wood that fakes the bread of our salvation. That's what this parable is about. When the world had done its worst to Jesus of Nazareth, what happened to him? He was risen. Yes. Let both grow together till the harvest. There will be a harvest. In the epistle, it talks about the world groaning and travailing in pain like labor pains. Think of it this way, that we live within God. And God is the womb in which this world is thrashing about in pain. And there will be a birth, a rebirth. God will give birth to a new creation out of the pain of this one. So my encouragement to you today is this. Be radically involved in the world as Jesus was. And take the approach to evil that God chooses to take. Do not retaliate. Respond in love. Love overwhelms evil. And I offer you the prayer of May Sarton, the main poet. Help us to be always hopeful gardeners of the Spirit, who know that without darkness nothing comes to birth, as without light nothing flowers.